Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul France, owner of France Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us, we have talk guests every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone to dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. Call ID is 17702. Or you participate on the web, just go to the Talks website at www.talkshow.com. Search for call ID 17702. Or if you want the best online experience, you can go to twitch.tv, yes, twitch.tv/SFU on call, and you will find us there in a nice chat room to chat with me and other people. Also, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, you'll follow me on the Twitters or X or whatever they call it this week. You can then follow me on there. So SFU On Call is the podcasting account. So you can talk to me there. You also can talk to me on my personal account, which is Paul France, FPAULFRANZ. There's no T in that. Also, if you want to follow my business account, which is Franz Games, FRANZGAMES. Again, there is no T in that, of course. If you want, this podcast gets through the podcast, available iTunes, and various other feeds around the net. This news from ADB for this week is Steve Cole finally finished up the art for the Orion MS, the Master Starship book, though he did find out that he did something he wasn't supposed to, and did some art for incorrectly. I think he did some incorrectly. Or missed some, for like 23 items. So it's like he had to work on them some more. Also, Steve Petrick has been working on Module K, the Master Starship book, a little more, and also the IC Master Starship book. There was a note from one of the meetings that they had, and that if when the Orion Master Starship book was completed, out the door, shipped, that's when they want Mr. Petrick to focus on the ISE Master Starship book. So, you know, keep this, you know, just to let you know that will happen before the updated Module K. And this week, I found on the online store is the FedCom Lesser Magellan Cloud Playtest Pack. It's $6.95. The advert says, Captain, by Duvet, ship is firing the mass driver. Lieutenant, bring us around. Weapons hold fire until you can get target and neutron beams on his rear starboard shields. Welcome to Lesser Magellanic Cloud. Boy, I'm having real problems today. Whether you sign up for the Mudave Imperium, the Anine Protectorate, or one of the other empires in the LMC, your skills will be tested. The playset packs include rules for combat, weapon systems, terrain, and ships, including scenarios to test your skills. There are cruisers for Baduve, the Anine, and the Maghadin. I think I pronounced it. Empires. There are stores for the Badavi, Anine, Maghadin, Uthuki, and Jumakians. For you to fly, there's even a short essay on tactics to get you started. So if you want to, that is the playtest pack for the LMC for FedCom, which would be always looking for more playtesters. And definitely the LMC is a unique set of tactics. And because one thing with the LMC, you actually have two layers of shielding, which is, I know it's kind of weird. I'm not sure how they handle the, damage reduction factor. I'm not sure if they handle that or not. I had not actually looked at those rules. So, but I'm sure buy it and you'll find out. And of course, moving on to the SFLN tournaments, Sapphire Star 17 tournament is, signups are open. I will actually have the tournament page, the signup tournament page set up tomorrow. I just found out that today that Mr. Petrick had opened up the signups. Onward and forward, when it comes to the libraries, there's actually a few more updates that I need to post that I just got this week. But other than that, not much has happened since last week. And also, when it comes to FedCom library, there has been no updates to that. I'm still holding off. Some of those are mine, and some of those I still need to contact ADB about. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, the one all Paul Walken, looking you, the Starfall Universe on call. And tonight, we've got actually a bunch of people. First, say hello, Doug.
Hello, Doug.
And second of all, someone we haven't heard from a long, long time.
Yep.
That's you, Barry.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm here.
Understood. And last, but certainly not least, Gary. How you doing, Gary?
Not too bad. How are things, friend? Did you ever get that Steam Deck, Paul?
Yes.
Excellent. Yes.
For those on...
And how are you enjoying it?
I actually haven't had a chance really to play it all that much. I did get... I set up my Steam Deck account. Oh, I forget which game. I installed one of the games that I had bought, around. I have not actually had a chance to play it because last time I downloaded it, and that's where I left it. It was downloading, and I never got back to it. I needed to sit down and actually play my Steam Deck. I looked into flat packs a little bit. I want to also look into how to install a flat pack on the Steam Deck, because one of the reasons why I got the Steam Deck was to basically give me a reminder to work on making the SFB Online client available on a flat pack so that I could install it on the Steam Deck to see how well it would work. Obviously, I wouldn't be able to use the controls, but I could at the very least see how it looks on the actual device itself. And of course, I can actually connect it to a monitor and play it through a monitor and do it that way, which is probably the most that's the best way it's going to be used, the SLB Online client, because it usually requires a large screen for a lot of the stuff that it does, the SSDs, your EA, things like that. I talked about this actually in a previous episode about, in theory, a lot of what can be done for SFB Online could be done via a controller. Like EA, you could probably do it using up and down arrows to increase or decrease the amount of energy you're using for that system, and other things to do things like that. There are certain things, and Doug already knows I talked about this, which is that would have to be better integrated into the client so that it could be done via controller. What's a good one? Tractoring. Have it so that actually it's an interactive thing instead of what's currently done, which is doing it via just texting back and forth, because I'm going to type to attract you 3 points of energy. Oh, and he fights it. It's a one because it's like range three. So he goes plus ones. Okay. And then the other person, okay, six energy, two, and blah, blah, blah. And you text back and forth these numbers, which means something, but they're not really interactive and really not meant for controllers. So, as an abbreviated discussion I had previously.
They map kind of like mouse, some of the kind of controls to the touchpads. But yes, it is true that, did you get the Steam Deck dock as well? Or like, do you have like some alternative dock, like USB-C thing set up or not?
No, I didn't get a dock, but pretty sure. Let me take a look. See, I forget. I was pretty sure that you can actually. I have to double check, but I could have sworn there was a. Do you need the Steam Deck? I mean the actual alternate, not the alternate, but the dock to have it go to a monitor. If not, if that's the case, I need to spend some more money.
There's third party companies that sell their own docks and so forth that are compatible with the Deck. But the main advantage of the one with Valve is that it gives you a second power cord, like an AC adapter rather.
Oh, okay.
So what you could even do is, say, for example, if you have a portable monitor, then you could use one of the cables to power the monitor as long as the monitor has a USB-C input, and then just leave the second cable in the dock so that when you're docking the Steam Deck, that it's all good to go that way as well. Oh, actually, another aside, just while Barry is here as well. Have you had a chance to meet up, the two of you guys had a chance to meet up? And if so, have you, Paul, been able to show any of the more recent Captain's Log material, like for the playtest, Gosman Marauders and Omega Paravians to Barry, or no?
No. Haven't. Barry's been...
I don't have any of the Captain's Logs.
And we haven't got together for a while either. Since Games of Winter back in February. Even then, I didn't have Captain's Logs with me.
Okay. Well, just a reminder is if it helps, the Captain's Logs as late as 52 are available on Warehouse 23. And 50 and 52, between the two of them, have all of the currently available material for the Gosmans, if that helps.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what you're saying is that all the material for the Gosmans is available online.
But yes, because I'm hoping in the future there might be like some sort of playtest pack or something, or some further means to explore them. But for now, the SSDs and rules are in those two Captain's Logs. And also on the Shapeways website, they actually sell a range of Gosman miniatures as well.
Right. I think I've seen those. Because everyone's watching.
Well, maybe I can take a look at them at the Gamers of Summer.
Mm-hmm. Actually, that might be a good... Gary, that actually sounds like a good idea to ask... Steve Cole about, you know, a quick, you know, playtest pack for that. And isn't there another one that's in the Captain's Logs that hasn't been released yet?
Captain's Log 54 includes four SSDs that are for the Paravians in Omega. And I think I might have mentioned it in the past, is that in the timeline, later in the timeline, it says that the Paravians gain access to anti-proton weapons.
Mm-hmm.
So the playtest SSDs swap out the alpha phasers and quantum wave torpedoes to make room for anti-proton weapons instead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's something, as a product that we could, you know, approach Steve Cole about, which is something... relatively simple to do. I'm not sure how many they would sell when it comes to the playtest material, how many people actually are interested.
Would that be anti-proton phasers or the anti-proton beams and anti-proton lances?
All of the above. So basically, for example, the playtest heavy cruiser has all of its phaser 1s and 3s swapped out for anti-proton phaser 1s and 3s. And the four quantum wave torpedoes are replaced with a lance and two anti-proton beams.
Cool.
So one thing is that you might be aware is that Peravian ships don't have a lot of heavy weapon mounts. So, like, it's not necessarily optimal for them to do a mix of quantum wave torpedoes and the empty proton weapons, one or the other. So the least worst way to do it is to, in my view at least, is to optimize the ship to either be an anti-proton ship or to be a quantum wave torpedo ship. But that's the whole opinion.
Right.
I'm hoping that people will be able to have a look at it.
Well, you need enough beams to make Lance worthwhile.
That's correct. But actually, of course, the pirate ships, those other marauder ships, rather, they have access, depending on which operating zone they're in, they have access to some of these weapons as well. So it's also possible to set up one of their ships with those weapons and see how well or not they work for them as well. So.
Yeah, the anti-proton phasers are interesting in just the way the damage table goes. I mean, at close range, they're devastating.
But I'm hoping that in a future Captain Vlog, there'll be a chance to do like an update file for the Omega Peravians just to kind of verify what kind of ships, like one, like in theory, like for example, there's a bunch of SSDs that are already in Module C6. There's no reason why some of them couldn't be just tweaked a bit and used for the Paradigms of Omega. And so, for example, the playtest ones that are in CL-54, they're each of them is based on the equivalent standard version that's in CL-54. So, it hasn't been formally stated, but that would basically allow the quantum wave torpedo to be used by those Peravians, and by the by extension, it could be used as a pirate weapon by those Osmonds too, in theory, because we'll have to see if a future Captain Vlog or some other product might
Many years ago, I created a spreadsheet to compare the various phaser types, and with the anti-proton phasers at point-blank range, they were absolutely devastating, but they fell off, and their damage rate fell off much, much faster than any other phasers.
And, of course, with the Lance, you have to have it lined up on the forward center line, unless you've got a turret like a warp ship. So the trick would be to try to maneuver into that position, or for the opposition to keep you from doing that. So.
Right, very, very limited firing arcs.
But yeah, so is everything okay, that Paul? Or
yeah, I'm just listening in on guys.
Okay, all right. Okay, so, there's actually a couple of things I wanted to mention, and one of them is on the BBS, the Fed and Empire guys are in the process of looking at some of the counter sheets, because I think there's like four products worth that are getting reprinted, and some of the previous reprints have basically been able to switch from an old 216 counter format counter sheet to a new 280 counter sheet. So that's basically a lot of spare space to add in.
Right.
And as part of that, one of the counter sheets for strategic operations, there was already a few requests to add in some campaign conjectural ships for the Tholians. So ships that they could have built, but they didn't build historically. So for example, like a tug or a survey cruiser, that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
And cool. One other option that seems to be coming up is to maybe use this counter sheet to use the empty space, rather, to have a closer look at the Tholians of Draco. And so there was an article, it's in the Tholian Master Starship book now, but it was originally in Captain Vlog 39. And it was basically about a separate group of Tholians who end up in the Draco Dwarf galaxy. It's a satellite of the Milky Way. And there's like a couple of specific ships that they had. So the idea being is that just before the revolt, the Tholians basically started inventing new ship types. But because the revolt broke out, they never really did too much with them. And one of them is a kind of survey ship that's called the Sojourner. But it's not guaranteed that the Sojourner is actually just one of the current, you know, survey cruiser SSDs just made real or whatever. So there actually is a thread for the Sojourner itself to try to basically come up with ideas as to what the technology would be that the ship is made of.
Mm-hmm.
And also, historically, in the article, it notes that the Sojourner is actually in the hold fast between Y195 and Y207. So depending on what kind of ship it is, it might or might not be useful for the Tholians against the Andromedans. So, like, for example, a regular Neo-Tholian survey cruiser, the one that they have, like, a campaign conjectural SSD for, it still has a webcaster, and it also, there's a light carrier variant. So in principle, you could try to use it to go after Andromeda satellite bases. Or you could even turn it into an X-ship and then give it, you know, even more power for that role.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if the Sojourner turns out to be a dreadnought-sized ship or something, then it won't be able to have X technology. So whatever things that the whole fast can do, it'll still be a non-X ship.
Right.
And so that might basically make a difference one way or the other in terms of how combat effective this ship would be after the whole fast had a go at it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I just kind of thought, since M81 has been a topic that's come up in the past, that I was just curious as to whether there's anything that is not already in print for the Tholians, courtesy of things like Modular 14 or whatever, that might be an interesting way of tackling this topic. And whether they'd want it to be the kind of ship that would be usable, like, in combat, or to have it purely as a support vessel. So,
huh.
That was one half of what I had in mind, wanted to talk about for me one second.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the initial point that you did make, which is, since this is, at the moment anyway, target of FNE, would it be a difference between the current survey ship that are available for the Tholians and this one, when it comes to at that abstract level, you know, because it reminds me of Starfleet Warlord. And Starfleet Warlord, I've had multiple players request, oh, this ship, you know, this variant or this variant or this variant. And the problem with adding those variants, at least when it comes to Starfleet Warlord, is that it will just add another ship, but it really won't add any differences. You know, it might be a little different here, a little different there. And as I think I mentioned before, but with Starfleet Warlord, one of those limitations when it comes to the ships is that if you buy more than one of the same type ship, you have to pay a penalty, basically a 10% for the first ship. For the second ship, you pay 20% tax, kind of on the EAPS that ship costs. So, but when that's one of the reasons why in Starfleet Warlord you want to limit the number of variants and so forth, is just because it just gives people a way out to buy more of the same ship, but just call them different things. So, you know, but I understand in FNE, having a different ship with the same overall numbers doesn't mean anything when it comes to FNE. It won't affect balance or anything like that. Unlike Starfleet Warlord, it actually could affect the balance of the game overall. But I'm Unfortunately, I don't know much about that particular ship. Obviously, as you described it, it was created right before the Seltorian revolt against the Tholians, and so really didn't have any active role, at least the way you describe it. It didn't have an active role before the Tholians were run out of the galaxy.
So, two things. One of them is the Andromedan War has not been published for Fedan Empire yet because people have been waiting for it for decades. But if and
over
when
a decade?
It happens, there's going to be a point during the campaign where all of the alpha players are going to have to try to figure out how to search for satellite bases. And if you recall from conversations about from the SFB side of things that we've had in the, on the show before, is the technology is such that a survey ship or a scout ship that is scanning empty space to try to find the satellite base, no other friendly ships can be close by because it messes up the sensors. The sensors have to be properly calibrated so that they're only picking out the signature, that the telltale signature for the base.
Is it the base that is detecting or the RTN network? The lines of travel.
No, the RTN is made above the bases. Right. So if you've got like between 100 to 300 satellite bases, together they comprise the RTN. But you have to find each base one at a time, as in like one ship at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So the scout ship is by itself doing the scanning. And that also means it's vulnerable in case the Andromedans try to ambush it before it goes anywhere. But say if it doesn't get ambushed and it finds a satellite base, it won't know that it's not a, it could be a battle station or some other bigger Andromedan base. So you won't know until you get close enough to start shooting at it. So that's the way it works, is that when the detection happens and the scout ship finds the base, the Andromedans can tell right away that the base has been detected. So that basically, by the time the survey ship, because the survey ship has to be at a dead stop in space to do the scan.
Right.
So it has to basically warp its way towards where the base is and hope that allied ships can show up in time. Because for the Andromedans, they've got three options. They could either send a mother ship that's nearby to pick up the base and move it somewhere else. And once they do that, all the scanning data that you've picked up is useless because you have to start scanning once again to try to find it another time. Or they could decide to abandon the base, in which case maybe there's like some other reason that they want ships distracted to do this. Or they could set up a pitched battle. Like they could basically, whenever the ships are coming in, they basically fight for the base, even though in the long run that's a losing strategy because the Alpha Empires can muster more strength at a single point if given enough time to do it. So again, it's usually the Andros only do that if they're purposely distracting you from some other campaign they're doing elsewhere in your territory. So,
understood.
But the problem with that is that if a scout ship is weak, then the ship might end up getting destroyed before it's able to actually destroy the base. Or if it's not an X ship, like if it's a standard ship, it might be too slow to get there in time because the Andros might have already picked the base up and skedaddled with it. So one thing that a lot of the Empires started doing, the Alpha Empires, is they would look at their X ship, like for example, the Federation, they've got these advanced technology survey cruisers, which are powerful combatants, but they also have sensors. So they're fast enough to be more likely to catch the base before it's relocated. And they also have the combat power to destroy the base, or if it's a bigger base, to hold it up in time for allies to come up and help destroy it. So once you've got enough of those, and all other empires that don't have ex-survey cruisers, they have advanced technology fast patrol ship tenders. Because you can bring the PFs with you and use them as a force multiplier to be able to help you destroy the base. So those ships ended up becoming disproportionately more important for winning the war in the Alpha Octans compared to what they had done at the tail end of the General War.
Right.
So this is what would actually be an issue for the Tholians, because right now they don't have very many ships that have special sensors and also any kind of combat power. Like, they do have, take a module X1R, they have a heavy war destroyer, only one of them actually. And in theory, you can use it to go after bases, but I think their standard PF tender, I don't think they have any heavy weapons, because some of the Empire's PF tenders only have phasers and sensors. So they're proportionally weaker when it comes to try to fight their way towards satellite base. So they're not always that great for that mission, which is where we would basically be looking at the likes of a Sojourner, you know, because if the Sojourner as an individual unit is not very combat capable outside of using its, because in the historical article, the Tholians back in the Hun galaxy, they didn't quite figure out how to install full proper special sensors onto starships, at least by the time of the revolt, because they had special sensors on bases, but the warp flare of a ship was something that they struggled to account for in terms of getting sensors mounted on, like miniaturized and get onto a ship. So the Sojourner apparently has some not as good sensors that we don't know the rules for, because they have to be invented first. But in theory, if those maybe up these other whatever sensors that were on the Sojourner before it got to Alpha, if it's possible to swap them out and replace them with real special sensors, then the ship becomes more capable. But if it's still not a combat scout the way that like a Federation advanced survey cruiser would be, and also if it can't have X technology installed, then it won't be much use in terms of trying to go after Andromeda satellite bases. So, but if it is a relatively powerful, or at least has the potential to be a relatively powerful combatant in and of itself, then yes, the Tholians might feel more encouraged to use it to get rid of satellite bases, not just any within the whole class, but also in the neutral zone region surrounding their space, try to push the Andros back as far away from them as possible. So I guess that's what I was trying to get at, because hopefully at some point there'll be a final choice made as to whether or not the Sojourner needs a brand new SSD, and if so, what kind of size or capability of ship it's going to be, or if it's going to basically just take the pre-existing campaign conjectural survey cruiser and just say, okay, it's one of them. Because if it is the survey cruiser, then it's small enough to be turned into an X-ship. But say, for example, if it turns out the Sojourner was the size of a dreadnought, then it's not going to get X technology. So there's going to be those limitations there. So I don't know if that makes any more sense in terms of what I was getting at there.
Yeah, well, the question is, obviously, is it going to be designated as, because of, it's in basically Draco Tholian galaxy, that it's going to be considered a ship that was designed and not built. So if people want to use it as an alternate timeline kind of thing, instead of sticking strictly to the historical, you know, the general war, then, yeah. The question is, would it be replace the actual ships themselves? You know, the other survey cruisers that the Tholians have. Do they have the Tholian cruisers? Do they?
Do they have a what?
A survey cruiser.
So in in module
R9,
there is a campaign conjectural SSD for a Neo-Solian survey cruiser. There's actually a shapeways miniature for it. I have one. It's you can see it even has little hexagonal shaped sensor dishes. So there's actually another side of the Sojourner that would be interesting as well, because so the Tholians that made it to Draco, they didn't escape the home galaxy unscathed. Because what happened is there was, like, you know how the Tholian Holfast sphere that we know in the Alpha Octant was flown there from the home galaxy because they managed to escape the revolt. So it turns out that there's like a few other spheres that also still had their engines, and some of those tried to escape. And one of them is actually in the history article that's in the Tholian Master Starship book. And the Sojourner and a bunch of other warships were trying to basically protect that sphere. And there were two major battles that took place in and around. There's like a satellite galaxy of M81 called we here on Earth call it Homburg 9, but I think the Tholians have some other name for it. And so the first set piece battle, the Tholians won, and the Sultorian ships, multiple Sultorian ships were destroyed, but a few managed to escape back to the home galaxy. But it turns out that that was the point, because the first battle was to basically slow up the Tholians so that a larger Sultorian task force that was also in pursuit could catch them and engage them more seriously. And that second battle led to the destruction of that sphere. But enough, after the sphere was destroyed, the Sultorians went home because they figured that, you know, their job was done. But it turned out that there were enough ships and supplies and escapees from the sphere that the remaining ships could basically try their best to make a trip towards the Milky Way galaxy. So, in principle, there would be use for the Sojourner in the Alpha Octant, because once it arrives in Y195, but there would actually also be historical use for the ship. Although that's the thing as well, because it's not real special sensors, it might not be a scout the way that we think about scouts, but it would basically still be around. And the other ships that became the Draco ships would have been present during those major battles with the Sultorians. And because the Sultorians actually have rules that were introduced to Fenon Empire in FNE Minor Empires, it is possible to create scenarios where you actually have those battles play out. So the main thing that you would need is to figure out how to represent the sphere and how the Sultorians can destroy it using web breakers. Because that's the one major thing that hasn't been accounted for rules-wise just yet. But in principle, it is possible to basically set these up. And also, if any new SSDs get created, then anyone in Starfleet Battles or maybe in Fed Commander could, if they wanted to, fight some of these battles too. So, there's basically other ways in which this, if this countersheet thing ends up leading to a more formal development for the Draco Tholians, then it might make things interesting for anyone who wants to get a better sense about the kind of stuff that was going on in and around the revolt. So.
Okay, yeah, true. One quick question. If I recall correctly, when it comes to attacking bases at all, when it comes to the Andromedans, one thing that the Andromedans would do is that they would have the ships go in different directions so that when the base was found and they actually, the scouts would then look for the warp lines, basically, you know, warp trails that they couldn't figure out easily without following each one of these warp trails, which one actually led to another base versus just dead end somewhere. Correct? So basically they use the special sensors to detect the bases, and then after they found the bases, then they could follow the warp lines to find another base. Possibly.
Yeah, that doesn't work in historically, because it would be too easy for the Alpha Empires to find the next base. So, like, even if you do pick up warp trails going away from the base that you just destroyed, they would deteriorate but by the time you get to where the other base would be, the trail would go cold. So, you might think that you'd have like a rough idea as to like whereabouts it would be, but the only way to know for sure is to actually park the ships and have them do the scanning to try to find them. So, so basically, each one has to be found one at a time.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Which actually, I know we discussed this before, which was the difficulty of the Andromedan War and the whole idea of having the Andromedans actually being an active player, especially considering that the Andromedans' goals are completely different from the Alpha goals of... Sorry, my cat. Their goals, you know, the idea is for the Andromedans to be able to attack and actually take over, you know, the galaxy, but not in a, you know, purely take over this territory and fight for it and keep it and then expand the territory. Hey, can you not do that? Sorry, kitties distract me. I got the kitten,
well,
and we have
had
the other large. What was that? I'm sorry.
It's just more that their logistics aren't set up to operate in the same way as most other empires.
Right.
It's actually kind of similar with the soldier as well, because the soldier, they need to establish various dark matter caches, like in little kind of like pockets of dark energy or dark matter, like in out of the way parts of the Omega. But they would still like attack planets and try to drain them of life or whatever. But they will actually be in a similar boat as the Andromedans, in the sense that so long as they're the ones on the attack, they're the ones with the strategic initiative, then they can do well. But once it goes the other way, then they're in a lot of trouble. So,
understood.
But actually, one other topic that might be more might be interesting is. By the way, but before I go on to this next topic, do you have a copy of Captain's Log 40, either as a PDF or in print?
No. I got 41, but not 40.
Okay. So let me check and see, because I'm fairly sure that there's at least one playtest SSD that is actually on the website. So this might basically help if you want to bring up on the screen to show what we're talking about. So playtesting things, playtest. No, that is the. yes. So there actually is an SSD for the old Galaxy Pirate Raider. Have you shown that? Oh, I guess we've talked about it in the past, but do you have the link, or do you want me to help you find it? Or?
Yeah, help me find it. I definitely did not save the link.
All right, so if you go to the ADB homepage and go to the master index, the A to Z.
Okay. Oh, master index?
And then click.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, just click on P and then go to, you'll see two different links for playtesting. One of them says playtesting, how to be a playtester, and the other one says things to playtest.
Okay. Got it. Old Galaxy Pipe Raider.
That is the one. And then once you bring the page up, just rotate the PDF 90 degrees to clockwise.
Oops.
So that you can see it right there.
Okay, and
on the off chance you're wondering what the ship actually looks like, it's on Shapeways as well. I have a couple of pictures of what the actual miniature looks like, but if you want to stick with just a 3D model, if you go to the ADB Shapeways homepage, there is a heading for Old Galaxy Pirates, and you can actually bring up the 3D model for the this very ship. And what's interesting is actually it's quite big, because considering that it's only meant to be a light cruiser, the actual miniature is huge by comparison to other ships of that displacement.
There. And Dosman, there they are. Do-do-do. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. That was wrong. I'm looking at the Zosman Raiders, not the old pirates. There it is. Old Galaxy Pirates. There they are. Right. Da-da-da. That's good. Looks like they're the same ship. So. Oops. People want to see it. Come on. There it is. Remember 3D. How it's basically a single wing. The idea was that on the other side, that's where the freighter would go, correct? The idea, it would attach it and then scooch away with it. And here's what the SSD looked like. Left warp center, got a few phaser ones, got six phaser ones, two phaser threes, and four optional weapons, which would be interesting. Okay, yeah, because you have a large freighter, then you turn modes E, if you capture, small freighter is a turn mode D. You have no freighter at all, turn mode B. And it also shows the different movement costs here.
I like how it says not an Orion ship.
Yeah. The one thing that I wasn't sure about, which is what the optional weapons that would be available. Yes, Kitty. Obviously, phasers would be available, and if this is the Old Galaxy, would the particle cannons be available? Yeah, the particle cannons should be available then. Because particle cannons are used by the Seltorians and by the Tholians. So that, that should have been a common weapon.
You'd think they'd probably want to go with shield breakers, though. Isn't that the right thing there? If you're a pirate?
Well, the shield breakers would just, or shield crackers would just be for Tholians, yeah. Not for, well, actually, not.
In the Old Galaxy, that's the question.
No, I guess.
Didn't the Seltorians?
Yeah, they should only, Celts had them. Never mind.
Right. And the question, that's the question. I don't know about the Old Galaxy Pirates, to know what optional weapons actually would be in the option mounts. I'm sure it's in the rules.
Well, it's probably not photons.
Definitely not photons. That would leave, definitely particle cannons would be available. Possibly shield crackers. And web, well, they'd be shield crackers, but they wouldn't have the web breaker function.
Yeah, so, oh, sorry, I forgot I have to put my voice on mute.
Yeah.
So, historically, they do have access to particle cannons and shield crackers.
Mm-hmm.
It's not known for sure just yet if they ever get web breaker technology, because the information about what happened during the revolt with these guys is not 100% clear. But prior to the revolt, at least, you can install shield crackers or phaser ones or particle cannons into any of the five mounts. And also, the wing option mount is a quote-unquote wing option mount, the way the Orions have. The structure is sturdy enough that you can actually mount a regular heavy weapon in there. Like, you don't have the more kind of limited mounts that the wing mounts on Orion ships have.
Hmm. Yeah, I missed that right there.
So, this ship is in Captain's Log 40, and there's also a destroyer version. The destroyer is basically like a shrunk down one that can't dock anything bigger than a small freighter, and it only has two option mounts in the front, but it still has most of the rest of the firepower, so it's still an interesting ship. And if you see the ship, both types of ship have three warp engines, but you're only allowed to use the wing warp engine for movement when you've docked a freighter. Like, without it, it's basically just, it's like using a giant batch of warp reactors instead.
Understood. Sorry.
But it is interesting how each of the pirate factions in different parts of the SFU, they all have like some sort of like interesting thing that makes them kind of like distinct from each other. So you might think that when you have certain common elements like option mounts, but depending on what you put in the mounts and also what the rest of the ship is doing, then you still end up with a very different concept of what space piracy is from one to the other.
Yeah, and the one thing that I always thought was interesting was the Zosman, which is part, you know, in the Omega octant, and that was they work a little differently, in that the whole idea is that you gather you rape and pillage, but you know, you don't rape and pillage, but you acquire these goods and so forth. But it's not just for yourself, it's also to support your actual empire. You know, you want to send it back to the home world so that it can be supported and so forth. So it's not just purely for you or for your small little clan, you know.
Well, actually, that is part of the reason why I wanted to talk about this SSD today. Because, as I say, the SSDs were published in Captain's Log 40, but it wasn't. Do you actually remember? Because you just told me that you have Captain's Log 41. Is that correct?
41, yes.
Do you have the SSD? Oh, sorry, I forgot I said that. Do you have the PDF or do you?
Yeah,
have
the PDF for 41.
All right. So, if you open that file, there is a document in it called Pirates of M81 Galaxy. It was written by Lauren Knight. He's basically been, to date, he's been the main guy in terms of like trying to push things for the home galaxy forward. But that article, and then also there's a thread on the BBS I'll get to in a second. The stuff that's in that is actually what I wanted to talk about today.
Oh, there it is. Okay. Found the article. Written by Lauren Knight.
Okay, so
Yes.
So, you know how in Alpha there are the Orion designs, they come in two different flavors. You've got the regular Orion pirate ships that have things like the engine doubling and so on. And then you have the Wind Orions. They're basically ships that can't double their engines, but they still have the stealth coating. They're basically sold to for use by the Wind Navy, by the Orion Cluster Cartel. So they're different enough to get two different SSEs, but they look the same in terms of if you want to buy them in certain shipways, that sort of thing.
Continue.
According to Lauren's article, the reverse is true for these guys. Because pirate SSDs that we have, they're basically for things called high pirate bands. They're kind of pirate, like cells of pirates that operate in different parts of M81. But the SSDs that we see, these are export models. So they're only about as good as we see them. But the ships that they're exported, the empire that they're exported from, they're called the Nebuline. And as you can guess from the name, their native territory is inside a nebula, each outside a bunch of different nebulae. And so, in principle, there are versions of this ship and of the other pirate ships that are used by the Nebuline themselves. And you notice how, like, actually one other thing, too, is the Nebuline have regular ships, like Navy ships, not just Raider ships. Mm-hmm. But the Navy ships don't have the big wing. So they're, quote-unquote, wingless ships. So, in principle, you could look at an SSD like this, and then the first step you could do is convert it into the native-use Nebuline Raider cruiser version. And then once you've done that, you could then reverse engineer it back to the wingless cruiser or light cruiser that was used by the Nebuline as a Navy. And that's where things start getting interesting, because according to Lauren's history, there was this major conflict that the Tholians fought in the home galaxy called the Great Martial War.
Right.
And it was seemingly it was the last great conflict that the Tholians fought before they conquered the entire M81 galaxy. And the Nebuline are said to be one of the three major enemies that were opposed to the Tholians during this war. And one thing that set the Nebuline apart is that apparently the Nebuline themselves have a technology that gives them an advantage when they're fighting in a nebula.
Huh.
If you think about how in Omega, for example, there's a couple of empires like the Kixith and the Rin, and they have bespoke technology that's designed to work in their home space. So, for example, there are terrain rules for the Kixavalor Cloud, and most other empires, when their ships are moving through it, they take damage just by moving through it. But the Kixa have designed their ships and their weapon systems to not only go through the cloud safely, but also to leverage the cloud in terms of adding damage that they're doing to their enemies. And that's why, if you look at an SSD for the Kixa or the Rin, they actually have two separate BPVs. There's one for use in open space, and there's one for use inside their home territory.
That would make sense.
So, in theory, the Nebuline version of this Raider ship might have something similar. So now, there aren't any rules in print just yet, but in the future there could be. And what would be interesting is that because the other thing to bear in mind is that the Tholians and the Sultorians, they have problems with Anebia because shield crackers don't work in Anebia, and most functions of the web don't work in Anebia either. The only thing you can use is a web fist. But even then, because you're firing it as a directional weapon, you've got an automatic -9 ECM that you have to try to overcome just by being in the Anebia. So yes, you can fire the web fist, but you've got a like a +3 to hit, or -3, depending on how you work it out. So actually scoring damage with it could be a problem.
Yeah, which puts them at a severe disadvantage. And from the looks of it, from the article, I'm doing a brief scan of the article, and that is, after the Martial War, you know, they continued the piracy, but overall, you know, the whole idea was the Numerlines really just wanted to disappear overall. That is, they want the Tholians to think that, you know, at some point they were just rumor or, you know, ghosts, what they were, you know. And because when it comes to Nebuline, the colonies were in these nebulas. That's the only place they really took over. And because they were so nebulous, the Ironwell can never really crush them, you know, to put them completely under their will because of that.
So, from a game perspective, now, I should note that if Lord Knight's still out there, I readily defer to him because in terms of getting the first go of putting it through to ADB in terms of, like, whether, you know, because he's the one who came up with the whole idea of the Nebuline. So, if he's still out there and he's still wanting to put his material forward, and that's absolutely great. So, but as a backup, like, say, just if only for my own speculation and for anyone else's too, I was basically, there's a thread that's on the BBS where there's, you can discuss the Nebuline, and there's like a couple of ideas that I had in terms of what might make them interesting as an SFD or SC faction. And so I was wondering if we had enough time still to go over them, or should I wait till another week?
Yeah, it's starting in a little bit late to get to a long discussion, that is. What section is it in on the discussion board? The proposals?
So if you go to the BBS and mm-hmm. click on Starkly Battles,
mm-hmm.
then click to New Product Development.
Okay.
If you scroll down there, you'll see a thread for, it says Module RM81, Tholian Home Galaxy.
Got it.
Yeah, and then the thread there for the Nebuline. Now, so yeah, there's basically been like a few posts, you know, going back to 2022 or so. But in theory, if there ever was enough material put together to allow a Home Galaxy module to be presented someday, then the Nebuline would be one of the new empires, so to speak, added in there. So whatever kind of tech they would need or get, ideally would end up in there in the future. But in terms of getting to that point, the floor is open in terms of what, you know, people might want that to be.
But I think, yeah, I think. Sorry. I just got I brought up the thread just to do a quick scan of it. Nibular combat system. Interesting idea. Right. Which makes sense.
Well, the trick would be, as I say, figuring out what kind of system would work for them without messing up the SSD too much. So my thought, such as it is that you could basically treat them like the Zosmans in that, or like a cloaked ship. So you basically have a paid-for system, and when you're paying for it, it generates the effects that give it the benefit in the nebula. But when you're not paying for it, it's no better in a nebula than any other ship. And also, when they're building the export model ship, basically my theory would be that you have to weave the technology into the ship as it's being built. Otherwise, you can't install it. So when the pirates are given the export model that we have the SSD for, they don't get the extra toys. They have to make do with what they have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, it's just like the Orions in the wind cluster, where they're quote unquote exported Orions that they gave to the winds as payment for having the base within the wind cluster. Didn't have all the goodies. The stealth, and cloaking devices. Well, actually, cloaking devices were not really made by the Ryans. They were stolen. Purchased for on the black market.
This time it would be the reverse, where the host keeps the good toys and the pirates get the less good toys.
Oh, agreed. Agreed, but the same kind of thing where the Ryans were, quote-unquote, exporting their ships, which didn't have like the engine doubling and didn't have the stealth to the winds. So
that's
it's kind
right.
of that same kind of work, same kind of way. What was that? I'm sorry.
So the trick would be trying to basically figure out what it is a nebula does in terms of like the main impact that it has on a ship ordinarily when you're in a nebula. And what would this system do that would not completely get rid of it, because that might be too powerful, but that would mitigate it enough to give these guys an advantage, but one that's still playable in SFB and at FC terms, because it wouldn't be any fun if they're just completely overpowered, and it wouldn't fit the history. But you don't want it to be too weak either, because you want to have it that the Tholians and their enforcers have that tough a time to try to deal with them.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I agree that that's.
So,
that,
if it's too late tonight, as I was saying.
Yeah, it's getting too late to get into a long discussion on this. I just wanted to look to see what was
okay.
The.
So yeah, basically yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was just thinking, whenever the next time we're on together. Maybe between then and now, if anyone has any thoughts about what kind of what's in the thread, or even if it's not in the thread, like any other ideas they might have in terms of what might make the Nebuline distinct enough from the regular pirates to be interesting, both either as an open space empire or into the Nebula, then we could pick things up then and try to hash out a few ideas and see what sticks.
Mm-hmm. Especially given the Tholian, basically you get the Tholian will, which is basically controlling everything outside the nebulas, and you have to deal with at the very least. Actually, that's the question. In theory, the Nebulan wouldn't have to deal with the Tholian will for the most part, because the Tholians would use Sartorians or whatever their force race at the time to actually deal with these pirates. You know, so
well, they're not necessarily pirates too. That's the other interesting thing. I mean, by their definition, you know, anybody that's not part of the Tholian will is a pirate. So it's kind of a loose definition for the Tholian home worlds, the Tholian home galaxy, so to speak. So, you know, they might be reduced to being raiders. They may be a group that was an empire at one point, but they retreat into the nebulas because they get otherwise everything outside of the nebulas gets wiped out by the Tholians and their enforcing race. So there you go.
Right.
Because they're definitely, you know, not Orions.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, my understanding from the Caps Log 41 and the brief little snippets I read, and that is when they exported the Nebuline, exported, it weren't Nebuline people flying the ships, they kind of leased them or sold them to other people to use them outside the Nebuline galaxy without the special equipment for being able to run easily within the nebula and have the special weapons that could be used within the nebula.
Yeah. Well, within it, they have to be basically overpowered.
The pirate versions of the ship are they're crewed by basically escapees from various planets that are under Tholian control. So, basically, if there's enough escapees to build up a pirate band, they then become known as a low pirate band, but they still just started with raiders and stuff. And then if they're big enough to be of interest to the Nebuline can come in and sell them these export model pirate ships, and that turns them into high pirate bands. But the Nebuline themselves are not flying the export ships. They're letting the escapees be the ones to fly them.
Exactly. So, yeah, I think that it'd be an interesting topic to talk about the different weapons that those ships could use, or are the weapons actually of the Nebulan already been defined or not?
Well, that's part of the discussion I wanted to have, because I have my own ideas in terms of what weapons to give them, but I'm not Law and Knight and I'm not ADB, so I would be happy to kind of like see if anyone has any thoughts in terms of what they think would be characterful weapons for these guys to have that make them distinct from the pirate versions of them, and it would also make them interesting to fight against Tholians or Sartorians. Because one thing that's noted on the BDS is that any of the previous enforcer species in M81 before the Sartorians, they're basically going to have the same SSDs as the Sartorians themselves, because The Tholians aren't going to bother redesigning the ships. They're just going to hand them over to the next species and say, you're it.
Right.
Which means that if you're doing a scenario, you can just use the pre-existing SSDs. You don't have to create new ones.
True. But if you think about it far enough, obviously the ships, the design of the ships have changed over the centuries when it comes to some of the previous, you know, because I'm sure the current design that the Sartorians use wasn't what was initial design of the first enforcer race that the Tholians used. I've a hard time believing that.
Well, the thing is, do you really want to go down that rabbit hole and have them create an early years version of everything?
Right. Understood.
And the other possibility that, you know, keeping with the lore of that long empire is that could be where they plateaued. Because basically they keep everybody else down. And they're going to keep everybody else down until either they get rebelled against successfully or somebody develops something better to go after them. So,
true.
I think
that's actually
you're probably,
covered
for
in
all simplicity's sake, better off with them as they are.
The Tholian Master Starship book actually has an expanded section on the home galaxy. And it actually has information that goes into detail as to why the technology plateaued for such a long time. And a lot of it's basically down to Tholian paranoia, because they were very wary of... they expected the enforcer to rebel, and also they didn't want any of their other subjects rebelling, and they didn't want any of their quote-unquote reformers within Tholian society giving technology to, you know, a subject species. So in most forms of technology, once they reached that level that they had when they finished the conquest, that was it for most of their rule. But the only time that they... Anyway, so yeah, that's... I didn't want to get too much of it because we're already 10 to 11, but that's actually one final thing I'd recommend people read with this context is in, because the stuff that's been published for the Home Galaxy Tholians is very in-depth in terms of like both what the Tholians have and what their subjugated species have. And in terms of trying to put the nebulae together, this material would be very relevant in terms of what they have to work with or what they don't have to work with, so to speak.
Understood. Okay. With that, we're going to wrap up for the evening and definitely get back to that. Obviously, we need to read up more on if the Master Starship book for the Tholians. In my mind, also the nebulas and how they work. And so that any weapons that we can think about for the Nebulon would be appropriate for a nebula that could work. I'm assuming it wouldn't be something like what the weapons for the Rin, which is they also live within a nebula, if I recall correctly.
Well, the Rin, so the Rin nebula is hollow, so the Rin technology is designed to work on the inside of the nebula, where they've already built up over the centuries. They built up a network of transporter repeaters, so that they can leverage the technology that they have.
Okay.
But their technology doesn't work in the nebula itself. So
right.
They're as vulnerable, if not more so, to anyone else if they're caught trying to transition through the nebula into open space beyond it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks for that clarification.
So the closest comparison is the Kixxa, because the Kixxa are the ones who can fight in their own home terrain, so I would think.
Understood. Okay. Well, as I said, we're going to wrap that up. And it looks like Barry is gone, gone. I'm assuming he got on his flight. Not saying goodbye.
Probably.
Sad.
Have a nice flight, Barry.
Bye, Barry. So, Gary, it's always been a pleasure. Hopefully we can get together again and talk more about the Neverline.
Definitely. And apologies if I've got everyone too much homework to go over between now and then.
Oh, that's fine. It's not too much. Okay, you have a good night.
Have a good night.
Doug.
Gamers of Summer.
Yep.
Oh, wait. Yes, Gamers of Summer. It's around the corner. It's getting warmer and warmer and warmer.
Yes, it is.
Give me and your schedule. Actually,
by the time Gamers of Summer is going to be closer to fall. But anyway.
Maybe we could have a Nebula campaign. 3 days of scenarios. 3 days of scenarios. Somebody trying to survive an incursion into the Nebula. I'll give you a hint. It probably fails horribly.
Yeah.
But there you go.
It's because of the rules we have to give them. And it's like, here's the rules. Figure it out.
Well, no, there is that whole Into the Wind thing. Yeah, there is a scenario where they try to invade.
Mm-hmm.
And they get destroyed horribly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They come to the Wind Cluster, yeah.
Please send me your schedule.
I did.
Put it on the events page. You did?
Yeah.
Yay.
Check Facebook Messenger.
Yay. Thank you, Paul.
You're welcome. I figured it out right before the podcast tonight so that you'd be happy and you can stop bugging me.
That's okay. I'll figure something else to bug you about then.
I'm sure.
I mean, yeah, sure. Thank you. That works.
Okay. Well, you have a good night.
You too.
So, I discussed with a little bit on Nebuline, obviously a little bit about the Steam Deck, which is great. Our initial topics went whee, which is fine. You know, it's always good to have new and different topics to talk about. You know, one of the topics I'm probably going to come back with next week and hopefully actually get some progress on that. Not sure. Especially because I'm going away for the weekend, and I'm sure I'm not going to get much work done when it comes to SWA line or anything else. Hopefully I can get the Warlord turns done. I think I should be able to do that with little to no issue. But anyway, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.